Good morning, friends, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. And thank you to Ron Trammell and the Cats Tribute Band for our intro music. Today is April 1st, 2022. I'm up way too early this morning recording this introduction. It's dark outside and about 40 degrees. But spring is slowly arriving here in West Nashville. I've noticed that my native azaleas are just now starting to push out blooms, and they are about a week behind as compared to last year. I'll be looking for hummingbirds to make an appearance shortly. We are excited to report that we have bluebirds nesting in two boxes in our backyard this spring. Yesterday, I recorded an interview with my old friend Austin Fessmeyer, the highly regarded director of Parks and Recreation for the city of Athens, Tennessee. This is part of our effort to do interviews with individuals who have been awarded the Fellow distinction by the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association. Austin has also been a past president of that organization. As you will hear, the city of Athens has a long history of excellence in parks and recreation. And on this podcast, we've previously interviewed Larry Zender and Brad Chambers, both also served as directors of that department. And it is not by chance that Athens has such an award-winning park and recreation agency. In fact, that small city purposefully considers excellent parks and recreation services as part of their recipe for success. They see it as an integral part of their plan to grow and maintain a multifaceted local economy. Austin and the city of Athens continue to innovate and to bring new dimensions to their program. In spite of being more than 30 years on the job, Austin brings a youthful exuberance to his work, along with the wisdom that comes with long experience. And so I hope you'll enjoy this interview with Austin Fessmeyer. And we will get started right after this brief message.
Hi, this is Heather Lose, Editor-in-Chief of the Tennessee Conservationist Magazine. Every year, we publish six beautiful issues packed full of timely and informative stories about Tennessee culture, people, and places. You can stay informed about your world and all the great things happening in your Tennessee state parks. It's easy to subscribe. Just go to our website at tnconservationist.org. Thank you.
Austin Fessmeyer, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's great to be here and good to see you.
Well, it's nice seeing you. Just so everyone understands, we tried to do this a couple weeks ago and you called in sick and I understand you had a terrible bout of some sort of a flu. And so I'm glad you're well and glad you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, wouldn't want to wish that on anybody. Let's
exactly.
Just put it that way.
Exactly. Well, thank you for joining me in that. So my audience knows you're coming to us from Athens, Tennessee, in the southeastern part of Tennessee.
Right. We're right between Knoxville and Chattanooga, and we like to call it God's country. And we're the friendly city, and everybody here likes to live up to that.
Well, it is beautiful, beautiful country over there in that sort of the Ridge and Valley section of Tennessee. And you're in a beautiful valley there with the mountains to your east and I guess a ridge top, the plateau to the west. So you're right between.
Absolutely. And we like to think we have the best of everything. Of course, we've got the river close to us, Watts Bar Lake, Tellico Lake is behind us. And then, of course, we got the Smoky Mountains within
right.
a day's drive.
Exactly. Well, Austin, thank you for doing this. This is part of, as you know, a series of interviews I'm doing with folks like yourself that have been awarded the TRPA, Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association Fellow Award. And I guess I've done a dozen or more interviews of folks, and I tried to start with the more senior folks, that people that maybe that have already retired or and that sort of thing. And so I'm now getting into the realm of folks that are still an active professionals, And so you're among the top of the list, and so thank you for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Glad to.
One of the things we like to do to start with is to sort of get a history from you, and it starts with how did you what was it that influenced you to want to be in Parks and Recreation? What as a child or in your background got you involved in that?
Oh, that's a great question. And when I was in Mr. Bond's class in, I believe it was the ninth grade in Tigard Junior High School, he asked us to write on what we wanted to be when we grow up. And I said, at the time, I really wanted to play for the St. Louis Cardinals. And I said, I want to play for the St. Louis Cardinals, but in case I don't make it, what I really want to do is stay involved in recreation so I can tell people how much fun it was to do what I did. And then when I became 16 years old, I started working for the city of Jackson as a summer job coaching baseball, and then moved up the ladder from a part-time summer job up into a athletic director's job, and then finally made it to the director of Parks and Recreation here.
So you grew up in the Jackson, Tennessee area?
Absolutely,
Okay.
yes. So you'll remember Dunk Demumbrum was the first
Sure.
director that I worked for, and then Jerry Gist came in after Dunk, so I worked for Jerry for quite a while.
All right. And tell us about your educational background in preparation for your career.
Well, I was my degrees are all in education because I had my hopes set on being a high school baseball coach, and
Okay.
it's very interesting. So I was working for the city of Jackson, and it was commission form of government, and the commissioner of education was also the commissioner of recreation. And when I graduated, he came over and said, "Hey, why don't you stay in recreation just for a little while? Because we had somebody leave, and we have a job opening." I said, "Well, okay, yeah, I'll do that for a little while." And 45 years later, I'm still in recreation. So,
So you went to work in Jackson when Director Dunk.
right,
What was his last name? Pardon
the
me,
Mumbra,
DeMumbrin. Okay,
yes.
and I don't know that I ever met him. My first when I got started in recreation. Went to my first CRPA meeting in Chattanooga, and that was the very first year that Jerry Gist was involved. And so he was the first Jackson director that I ever knew. So tell us about the different jobs and experiences you had there in Jackson.
Well, I think it very much so set me up to be a director of Parks and Recreation. I started out at the lowest level of coaching ball teams in the recreation division. At the time, they paid that staff to do that. It's all I ever wanted to do. So I coached as many teams as they would let me do. Next, they moved me over to hoeing around a track. And so I blistered my hands taking a hoe and hoeing a foot wide path around a running track. I moved up to bathroom cleaner after that and did park closing. Then after that, they moved me up, and these are all my part-time jobs. They moved me up to being field marking and in charge of getting the fields ready and running some tournaments and all. And so I believe I did every job that could possibly prepare you to understand what to do, wrote all the equipment, did everything like that. Now,
Right.
I always thought it was a blessing to be able to do what I now get to manage people doing.
So, how long were you there at the city of Jackson?
Well, I started when I was 16. They hired me in 1979 full-time when I graduated from college. And was there in total about 10 years.
Okay.
I took a little hiatus before coming up here, went to work in the First United Methodist Church in Jackson as their recreation and youth director. So was over there about 2 years, two and a
Okay.
half years.
Right. And the church recreation part of it is something that is not often talked about, or not talked about enough, I would guess. But There's a whole community of people that are involved with church recreation, not just in Tennessee, but across the nation.
Oh, absolutely. And I find it a little more prevalent in West Tennessee than it is in East Tennessee. But things generally move west to east when they're coming across the country. But yeah, around here, there's not as many community center type churches and things. When you get to Knoxville and Chattanooga, there's a few more of those. But you know, everybody in Jackson now, I mean, the church has that type of facility. So, and they rival a lot of community centers that cities put up as well.
So, Austin, you have been involved as a professional in making contributions to our professional society, and you've had all kinds of filled all kinds of different roles. I know that you've been on the board of the TRPA for often. Tell us about your professional involvement along those lines.
Well, I was vice president of TRPA and then, of course, moved to president-elect and then moved to president and then, of course, past president. Also,
About when was that?
oh gosh, I always have to look in the book to see
Right.
that. But
Right.
it was in the 90s,
In
I
the
believe.
90s. Okay, that's
So,
close enough. Yeah.
and then recently served as awards chair. They did that for several years just to stay involved, but
Right,
I always like
right.
to stay involved because it's I now try and do some mentoring with some people and know that it's, you know, please call if you have some questions.
Right. So when did you begin to your work there at the City of Athens?
May of 1987, so I
Okay.
am finishing my 35th year in like 30 days or so.
Goodness, goodness. You know, it's interesting about Athens. You're now the third person that I've interviewed that has had a connection to the city of Athens, with Brad Chambers and Larry Zender, both very top-notch park and recreation professionals. So what is it about the city of Athens that grooms people to be such great professionals in parks and recreation?
Oh, I'm glad you asked that because Athens has one of the greatest legacies of any community in the state of Tennessee regarding recreation. The community made it a priority right after World War II and started passing recreation initiatives in 1955. And in 1974, I believe they hired Larry as the first full-time director. And we just all were so blessed to be able to build on what the people who came before us, whether they were volunteers, council members, or like that, laid out a plan. And as a matter of fact, it's interesting, when they first hired me, I was told I could not work on recreation for 6 months. I was immediately to report to the University of Tennessee, the MTS division that was doing recreation at the time. And
Okay.
I was to plan recreation for the next 10 years. And they outlined this beautiful strategy to where they wanted a regional park that would rival any city in the country. And I said, well, I'm game for that. And so that's what I did, and have just been continually working off those plans as we keep moving
Austin,
forward.
I've never heard that before. So was it Mr. Bollinger that hired you?
Absolutely. Sure
Okay.
was. Marvin Bollinger. And Marvin and I are good friends to this day, and we still
Sure.
talk about that time. Matter of fact, we ate dinner last week together, and that's what we talk about, was how he had some of the greatest vision of anybody that I have ever worked toward, and just told you which direction you needed to go and got out of the way and said, let's get it done.
Right. Yes, he is well regarded as one of the finest of the city managers that we've had across Tennessee. It's an example of what can happen when you have really good leadership there in city government.
Oh, 100%. And
Right.
somebody who's willing to know it's the right thing to do for the next generation and be willing to stand there and take it, you know, to get it done.
So give us a description of what what's all involved in the Parks and Recreation Department there in Athens?
Well, it's interesting. We have 363,000 people go through our park system annually. We're a town of 14,000, a little over 14,000.
Right.
So our daytime population with all the plants and everything is about 38,000. But we are the only full-time recreation department with a lot of staff in the county. Right. So we serve about 55,000. So we do... We have a full maintenance department and also a programming department. So we'll do, we obviously do dances, we do egg hunts, we do things just like every other department, but people always marvel at how many people come to our activities.
So talk about your parks, the park system a little bit and what you've got along those lines.
Well, again, I inherited a legacy. Larry had in 1976 built Heritage Park, which was obviously a bicentennial project. So we now have 10 parks, and we just recently completed a rails to trails conversion that's right now it's out 5.6 miles, which is one of our jewels of our system, and we do that with McMinn County.
Okay.
We have neighborhood parks, we have city parks, we have just about everything. And one of the things that we're very proud of, our Athens Regional Park that Marvin told me to do when I first got here, it's
right. 164 acre
park. Okay. And has just every facility you would see in a large city.
Yeah, I noticed from looking at your website, it's got the ball field complex there. I noticed that you have a couple fishing lakes in your park system. Am I correct in that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And we generally every year work with TWRA, and of course Comcast does the Comcast Cares Day, helps us do fishing. There are more children who have caught their first fish in those lakes than anywhere because we stock them with trout for a big fishing derby. And you know what, I drew back on a little bit of things they used to do when I was little, and the one of the clubs back home would put fish in a lake and we would go try and catch them for prizes. So
right.
we upped that ante a little bit, and we put a $500 tag on a fish.
Oh my.
So you can imagine the amount of people that come and bring their kids out to fish at that. So
well, describe those lakes for us. How big are they, and what sort of infrastructure do you have there? Is there a fishing dock there? Tell us.
Now, we originally wanted to do that and couldn't get the permits years ago. So we have a 1 acre lake and a 3 acre lake.
Okay.
And so and they're spring fed, which makes it great for us to be able to put the trout in. And also we operate a couple of spillways now, but currently don't have any docking system or anything. It's just we like to call it surround the lake and fish when the kids are all out there. So it has walkways all around it. It's a third of a mile walkway goes around the large lake. So people are walking around while people are fishing. And it's just, I tried to do that a little bit like Mayberry, but it was in town, you know, where you can come do that. So, but it's really great to watch the kids, because it bothers me that parents don't take their kids fishing like my dad used to take me and things. And when we afford them that opportunity, we think we get them hooked on fishing and then they keep going.
Absolutely. So let's talk about recreation programming. And what does that mean to you?
Well, I tell everybody that works for me, it's our job to do the same thing a large city does. We just scale it down and make it affordable and available to our people. So we look at what people do and say, how can we do that here so our people don't have to drive an hour to do it? And then when we do it well, what happens is people drive an hour in here to do it with our people. And so we know we're successful. The economics of what we do recreation programming wise hits us right now about $7.5 million worth of economics through our programs and our parks.
Okay, now you're going to have to back up and tell me more about that. What does that exactly mean?
Well, what we do is we track every person, every possible expenditure they would make if they participate in a program or go to a park. And we analyze that data. I'm really a Excel freak when it comes to doing that, but
Okay.
analyze that data and say, what does parks and recreation mean to my community?
Okay.
And we don't use inflated numbers where like somebody would say, well, if you'll bring this ball tournament, it'll be $10 million to you. We actually use proven economic calculators to say this is the amount of sales tax, this is the amount of turnover, these are the amount of jobs that we're creating. So we look at recreation a little bit different than most people do and can validate what we're doing and bringing into our community.
We'll talk a little bit about the variety of things that you do. And you and I spoke on the phone this week, and you were telling me, just for example, about a father-daughter dance program that you do. And I've been around recreation a long time, and I was not aware that that was a thing. And I learned something about it. So tell our listeners about that program and how unique it is.
Our dance, we just finished our 36th dance. We had to skip a year because of COVID, but we have what we have determined so far is the largest daddy-daughter dance in the United States. And Athens is really tight when it comes to things like that. And we offer up 2,000 tickets to the dance. We do four sessions, 500 at each dance, because that's what our room can handle. And then plus some sponsor tickets
What, do
that
you
are in
break it down
there.
by age group or something of this?
No, it's very interesting. People ask us that all the time. But the people that come to our dance, if you were born 4 weeks ago in Athens, you come to the dance and start your journey, so you get your picture with your dad and your pins that go with it, and it'll also be the last place you go with your father. So there's dads in there that are 80
Oh,
years
goodness.
old coming with their daughters, and it's just become a special mission for people. But it started out as interestingly, the first two dances had 15 and 18 at them, and when I came in to the dance, I asked all the programmers when I first got here. I said, would you go over all the programs with me? I want to see the list and we'll go over evaluations. And they showed me that and they said, we think we ought to cancel this because nobody comes. And I said, well, who are you advertising it to? And they said, we're trying to get the dads to bring the daughters. And I said, well, why don't we get the daughters to bring the dads? Because that's the catch on
Right.
that. And the next year we had 150, and we've been growing every year since.
So where do you hold this event?
Well, currently we're at McMinn County High School,
Okay.
and we shut the cafeteria down, bring in big production crews, and make it just a big event, big screens and video walls and things like that. So it's a hot ticket in Athens. You don't want to go up against the dance weekend for doing something. So.
Gracious. I understand that you all are involved with Soapbox Derby.
Absolutely. Now, we are currently the longest running consecutive Soapbox Derby in Tennessee. Chattanooga was actually in the first Derby in 1934, it's my understanding, but they stopped for a little while. So yes, we're big into Soapbox Derby, feel like it's a good STEM program, and it brings a lot of national and world attention to Athens.
Okay, what do you mean by STEM program?
Well, it's science, technology, engineering, and math. And so the kids are having to build their cars. It's fun to do it on a Cub Scout level where you're building the little car. It's a whole lot more fun to build it and be able to drive it in the
Yeah,
street.
you're
So,
making reference to the Pinewood Derby thing that the Cub
correct.
Scouts have always done, where you have a little model car, you race
Right.
on a little track. But to have a to build a car that you can actually sit in and steer and be safely down the hill is a whole nother matter altogether.
Oh, 100%. It's 3.5 inches off the ground, 30 miles an hour in the street, and the
Goodness.
they just love it. And of course, we're a preliminary to the World Championship, so our winner as does the other winners in the state, goes directly to the World Championships in Akron, Ohio.
Akron, right, right.
And so, and we've done pretty well up there. We've trophied several times.
How many participants would you have at your local competition?
Our local is generally about 33 racers, which is a mid-sized to large race across the country. There's three divisions in Soapbox. We race two of them, and then we race the special needs division as well.
Okay.
And so we take three champions to the World Championship.
So Austin, how is it that young boys and girls in Athens, where do they build these cars? And how, I mean, people don't have tools to do this at home.
Well, actually, Soapbox Derby has come out with a kit about the last 20, 25 years. It's a kit.
Okay.
Everything comes to you, and all you need is some wrenches and a few wrenches, screwdrivers, some tools that you would probably have around the house.
Okay.
And then we do clinics to tell everybody how to get them to go fast, where to put the weights in them, and things like that. Because it is a whole lot of fun trying to remember your physics from high school. So that it's very interesting. It is one sport the kids like to laugh. One child said the other day, "Hey, this is one of the few sports that our parents can participate in legally." <It's> like, absolutely.
So. Well, that's just fun. I didn't realize that the Soapbox Derby people had put together kits for that. I can remember as a kid, growing up in Ohio, it was a thing. But people had to actually fabricate these things from scratch. And that was not an easy thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. And back then they would give you a piece of paper and said you could spend $15, for instance. You bought the wheels and the axles, and they said you can spend $15 on your body. Now, interestingly, when you talk to Gerald Parrish, Gerald's an old Soapbox Derby driver.
I didn't know that.
And so he had to build his that way. So
the old-fashioned way. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yes. He had to stick build. We call that stick building them. And he drove a stick build car in the race.
Tell us more about recreation programming in Athens. Cultural arts, nature programs, or just your run-of-the-mill balls and bats programs. Tell us more.
Well, like tonight, for instance, we're doing a food truck event where we're taking a lot of city equipment down to the park where the food trucks are, and we'll do touch a truck activities while the food trucks are down there. Next weekend, of course, is Little League opening day in the morning, and then we're doing one of East Tennessee's largest egg hunts in the afternoon at 4 o'clock. If we hold the record for picking up 10,000 eggs off the ground at 55 seconds, believe it or not.
Goodness.
This year we're putting out about 12,000 eggs, and it'll more than likely take a minute and a half. There's that many kids out there to pick them up. So we do a lot of large things like that. Of course, we talked about the fishing derby. We have that right coming up. Doing volleyball camps. Tennessee Wesleyan University is right beside us, so we use their athletic teams to do summer camps with us as well.
Okay.
So have a great resource there. So it just gives our kids around here a little bit something like that you'd see in the big city.
Right. So we've already mentioned that you're in a local government where the city manager form of government. Do you have a park board or a park and recreation board there in Athens?
Oh, we do. We have a very strong recreation advisory board.
Okay.
And again, Larry was the first director that came out of that. But up until Larry, that board was the recreation board. And then
right,
they went advisory role, and Larry took over the full-time operations. So that board has a super great legacy of people on that board that some of them just until recently were involved in the 1955 through 60 activities there. So we were That's just how great Athens is, though. Everybody's excited.
Well, tell us more about what you do to groom the people on that board and to bring them into what you're doing as an agency.
Well, I think the most exciting thing that we do about that is we're all excited about what we're doing, and we push hard, and we bring activities in that everybody's proud of and wants to participate with us. And so then we diversify to where we might be doing interpretive recreation and have somebody on that likes that. We'll be doing sports activities, and then we will, of course, be shooting fireworks. We'll be doing all of those types of activities. So we just have a good diverse group, and everybody understands how important it is to our community.
Right.
So we don't really have a problem getting people to participate in that regard. And also, we have another board. Our Athens Parks Foundation board works closely with us as well. That's our nonprofit side. They're an
Okay.
incorporated side, and they have 5 members who are super strong recreation and business leaders that help. They supplement, not supplant, our funding. But we do a lot of joint projects together with the recreation board and the foundation board too.
Tell us more about the foundation board. Are they raising money for capital projects or for programming projects, or what are they doing?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
It's interesting. I was listening to Bill Kegler's from Ogilvie's classes one time. I took it one time and I came back and I didn't do anything about it. And I went the next time and I was watching people in the room as he was going over his stats and things like that. And I looked around and people had their heads down, was doing things like that. And I told myself right then, I said, I am the dumbest person in the world if I don't get up from this class, go immediately home, find the money to get this done, and start a
A
foundation to
foundation.
help me. And I did that, and people have called from all over at the time, now called all the time saying, how did you get that done? I said, just jumped in there and saw that it was, and I firmly believe it is the new way to do recreation. If you don't have both sides, people who would like to help you don't want to help the government, but they understand what a foundation can do for you. And we are so blessed. We get donations from all over the United States to help us here.
So, Austin, you've just given us a lot of good information. I want to try to unpack it. Many of our listeners are not park and recreation professionals. They're not going to know what you're talking about when you talk about Ogilvie. So, back up just a second and tell us about what goes on in West Virginia at Ogilvie Park.
Well, what impressed me most was they were put in a situation where they had to be self-sustaining, basically, and they really created the model of how recreation runs when it runs. You don't want to say perfectly, but it's a really great model of public-private. With theirs is more heavily on the private side of what they're doing, but it was so important to their community and all when they were losing the industries and things that were there. But recreation made that community come back to life,
Right.
and they just did that so well. And I just I've told Bill, I immediately came home after class and I said, Bill, what would it cost for me to get you to come down here and talk to my county commissioners and my city council members? And I said, and I mean now. And so he told me we got it all done, and I
So you
just,
brought him down to talk?
oh, 100%. And
Yeah.
I don't know if it was smart move or what, but I just stood up in front of our councils and I said, if we don't do this right now, it's the dumbest thing that we have ever done in recreation, not doing something. And we got it passed and been rolling along ever since.
So, Austin, let me back up just a second. At Ogilvie Park in West Virginia, they have had a a training program that they've offered for state and local government officials to come in and learn about really business management and marketing and enterprise opportunities and how to do those things within a park and recreation department. And local governments, progressive local governments like Athens, Tennessee, have been sending professionals there for training for the last 25 or 30 years. And so I go into all that to illustrate the benefits of that. And if you send someone to a school like that, they can bring something home and really deliver something to your community.
Oh, 100%. As a matter of fact, when I was doing my budget this year, I was putting in for one of our employees to get up to revenue school.
Right
up there, because, you know, I can preach it, but when they hear it and it's in a 2-year class, I mean, you really start to see that as a good model.
Right. I don't know if you remember Charlie Spears. Charlie Spears was director of Metro Nashville Parks and Recreation when I first got involved. And he was one of the very first to do enterprise operations within a park and recreation department. And so we've all learned about those things from him and from others.
Oh, 100%. And I like I said, the only thing I ever tell people when I consulted other cities, they always say, well, how much money do you have in your account? And I said, more than you do, because you haven't started yet.
Right.
I said, it's not about what I have. It's about what I'm taking out of what I'm continuing to have. And you have to, you can either lay there like I saw all those other people and like I did one time, honestly, and thought, that's too much work. But when I realized that is the up and coming model for recreation and how it's going to be, I really am pleased that we were able to be one of the early people to put that model into place.
Right. The you mentioned in passing just a minute ago, having to pitch this idea to your county commission. And I'm curious about, and you said earlier too, that your service area goes beyond the 15,000 that live in your city, and you really are serving the entire county. Tell us about your relationship with county government. I'm sure it's multifaceted, but how does that work? Do they contribute to your budget? Or what?
Well, that's a good question. My operating budget is totally from the city of Athens.
Okay.
However, I can tell you I'm in and out of the county mayor's office quite often.
Okay.
Because I manage the Rails Trails project that we have is a city-county project, and
okay.
I manage it for everybody. So
okay.
we use joint funding for that. We do joint grants together. We work together very well. People sometimes marvel at the fact that we actually sit down, work things out, get them done, get them funded, and keep going. So capital projects, we work together on funding. We look at...
So county government will make a contribution to a capital project?
Oh, 100%. And we also did our master plan together. So when I did the master plan, I went to them and said, look, it's more fruitful if we do a countywide master plan. So we directed that and have all the cities and the county in our plan. And we manage that out of here if there's an update or something like that. So now we're one of the few places that we're very friendly with each other.
Right.
And if they need something, they call. If I need something, I call. And for a long time, they had the only hotel motel tax. So I would request some of those funds and use them. And the commission was very generous to us over the years because we were doing professional recreation. I can't overemphasize the fact that they knew when we were asking for something, it was going toward what it was supposed to go toward, and it served all the citizens.
Got you. Now, you mentioned in the very first part of when we were talking about the various industrial plants and facilities in the Athens, McMinn County area. Tell us about that. And do you have a notion or a thought about the importance of the Park and Recreation Department in keeping those plants in your town or getting new facilities?
Well, I will tell you that that is looked at. It's very high on the list. When I also work with the economic developers and things, but more importantly, the people who are here also know to call whenever they have something going on, or if they have somebody move in here, and they'll call me and like, hey, we have somebody that's coming over from Japan and they're badminton players. Can you hook us up? Can you
how do about that?
The other like that. I had a call this week from an industry that was recruiting someone and said they really needed them here. And they said they're real big pickleball players and said, can you give us an update on the courts that y'all have in the plan? Like that, because we're using that as a recruiting tool. So our facilities, we handle so much diversity through our facilities and programming that the plants tell us it's very helpful to them. And then in turn, they're very nice to us as well, too. When we need something, like if we want to do a big fireworks show or something, they all help us out.
They're there to sponsor events for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I learned a long time ago, you know, we ask people for things when we need things, not just because we can go ask them, and don't abuse the relationships. And right. And they do the same thing. I mean, they know they can call us anytime they need us.
So the plants that you have, tell us about who they are. What kind of plants do you have there?
Well, of course, when Larry and Brad were here, Mayfield Dairy was the biggest employer. They're still here. It's Dairy Farmers of America on that. Now it was Dean Foods, and then now it's back to Dairy Farmers of America. But mostly what we're doing around here now is automobile parts. Okay. So your seat frames are made here. Of course, Denso is our largest employer. And they're making oxygen sensors and, high-end parts like that. So I'll tell you, if you ever get a chance to tour a Denso factory, it is cleaner than clean. Wow. It's just hard to understand how all that has to be so perfectly clean in that plant to make that happen. But
so do you, in your recreation programming, have leagues where you might have a team from one plant and a team from another plant competing? Is that something that happens?
You know, interestingly, when I first moved here, that was very prevalent and we had a lot of that going on. Now that is more shifted to we are servicing the children and they are the people are real diligent about putting their kids on teams. So it's shifted 100%.
Okay.
So now we still have the parents and grandparents out there, but they're watching their kids play, to where when I first came here, we might have 70 industry teams
right
here. Now we have maybe 10 industry teams and 35, 40 youth teams. So
interesting.
Well, I see a lot of that, and I used to worry about that, but a lot of that is people can't afford to get hurt. You know, we didn't think about that 30 years ago. You went and played on the ball team and, you know,
if you twisted your ankle, you twisted your ankle. Yeah.
Yeah. Nowadays it's like, can't afford to miss work by doing things like that. But everybody's
out there
watching the kids play. That's the only thing that I can really attribute that to, because it's down all over the United States. It's not.
No kidding. Huh. Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. Tell us now, this raises an interesting question. What are the trends in recreation today? You mentioned pickleball, and I know from talking to our folks here at Metro Nashville that they have been absolutely inundated with people playing pickleball and trying to accommodate them by improvising facilities where they may have had a tennis court that wasn't being utilized for tennis so much, and now they've converted it to pickleball. But pickleball is just an example. But what are the trends in what's going on now in recreation today?
Well, I think what we see now, of course, splash pads weren't even in existence like they are right now. 10 years ago, you didn't even, you hardly thought about doing that. And then all of a sudden, all the new equipment came out, and it's like just a water playground that you have to have one or you're not really a recreation department.
Right.
You know, playground equipment has changed tremendously. Disc golf. If you don't have a high-end disc golf course, you don't have a disc golf course. And we were fortunate enough to, we saw that coming 20 years ago and hired one of the PDGA professionals to come in and said, "Hey, we've got land, but we wanted to host a professional tournament," and said, "Would you design and build a golf course so we could host a professional tournament?" And we did that in stages, and now we host professional tournaments and all. So we kind of saw that coming, but different things like that, you know, soccer and baseball and all that it just it moves in and out, you know, the rules modify a little bit,
Right.
but I would say splash pads, disc golf, and what I like to call fast food recreation, where people want to do a program, get in, get out, just like going through a drive-through window. We do a lot of that now, which we weren't doing before. Where you and I were growing up, we would commit to a six-week program to do tennis. Now it's a quick hitter, learn to play, and then if you want to keep going
Right.
like that. So.
Right. So you do clinics so that those sorts of things.
Get you introduced to it, and then if you want to keep going, keep going. Interestingly, we also see tennis is starting to move back up. It rides a roller coaster all the time, but we do USTA clinics. Got one tonight, I believe. We've got 44 kids signed up for that, which USTA, that's one of the largest junior clinics that they have number wise. So they like us a lot.
So is this a staff person that's conducting this clinic, or does USTA bring someone in to do the clinic?
USTA does all the registration and all, and then trains the people. We'll either use the college players or
I see.
like, so
I
it's
see.
a good relationship with USTA that helps us do that.
You know, recreation is an interesting thing because there's always some new thing out there. I mean, I remember when jazzercise was something that every community center had to have a jazzercise class. I think yoga is something that's going on now in a lot of cities and doing yoga classes. I remember the first time we offered a belly dancing class in Sevierville. Now, I don't think anybody's doing belly dancing anymore, but we got 30 or 40 women out to do the belly dancing class.
Oh yeah, 100%. I remember all of those, and that's you know, the best recreators look at those things and try and see what's coming, and don't tell people something's bad. You know, let's just get in there and see how it goes, and roll with it. So,
Right.
but anything to do with kids, I like I said, I'm a big put a family unit out there in any program that we can find that puts grandma, granddad, mom and dad together. I think that's a real, we're doing a disservice to children not putting those types of programs out there, and we strive to do that a lot.
Programs that they can do with their parents.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, in addition to our daddy daughter dance, we'll do a mother son dance.
Okay.
Like I said, anything that we do, we'll try and say, "Come on out." Soapbox Derby is all parents. Said the fishing derby is obviously all parents, and all, and we just look for things like that. So bring everybody, you know.
Fantastic. So what is your future looking like? Are you going to be there at Athens for the near for or is retirement in your mind these days?
But, you know, people ask me that all the time. I'll be 65 in November, but of course Social Security says that's not retirement age. So, you know, but I always feel like as long as you're having fun and enjoy going to work, and I tell people this isn't my job, this is my life. And I've never done anything else ever in my life. And I just can't picture myself doing anything else. And I just enjoy seeing kids being able to do things and grown-ups do things that that are just fun. And, you know, and it comes at a price. You know, weekends, nights, weekends, holidays, I've never had any of those like normal people do. And I would say looking forward, I'm not sure I'd know how to handle that being in a normal situation like that.
You know, that is an interesting observation that I don't think a lot of people understand. If you're in the parks and recreation business, you are working every holiday.
Absolutely.
And if you're not, there's something wrong. And you have to find your days off as you can.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But, you know, I tell everybody that signs on with us, that's who we are. That's what we do. And, you know, you won't get appreciation a lot of times from people until you need their appreciation. Then they're going to be standing there for you because they know that's who you are.
Right.
And I that's the fulfilling part of Parks and Recreation to me. We pulled something off that made a whole lot of people happy, you know, and, you know, there's obviously people who don't like some of the things you do, but those are it is far less of those people than there are people who like the programming.
Fantastic. Well, Austin, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. It's been a joy to get to talk with you again. It's been several years since we've talked. And I appreciate all you're doing down there in Athens. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you so very much. And I wanted to tell you as well, as somebody asked me a while ago, says who you were. And I said, well, he's one of the people who I looked at whenever I was a young recreator. And I'm not that much younger than you, but you were up on the stage doing things like we were talking about working with Jerry when he was president of TRPA.
Exactly.
And things. You and several of the people we talked about today made a impact on me. And I never forget that. And I try and take a little bit of everybody as I go and do programs and do things like that. And just wanted to let you know, you're one of those people that I looked up to a long time ago. And
That's awfully nice of you. Thank you for that.
It's just how we do what we do. But thank you for asking me.
Yes, sir. And thank you again.
All right. Bye-bye.